Welcome to another edition of the Dementia Care Partner Talk Show. Now, here's dementia care expert Tifa Snow and your host, Greg Phelps.
Hello, and welcome to the Dementia Care Partners podcast, brought to you by IMP. You or your loved one could be just one telephone ring away from a scam caller stealing thousands of dollars. That's why engineers built the IMP system, the smart call blocker for landline phones. IMP stops 100% of unwanted landline calls before they ring. For more information, go to joinimp.com. I'm your host, Greg Phelps, along with Tifa Snow, and how the SAGE test works for dementia. But what do you guys call it? The mini mental? Are they the same thing? Does every country have their own skill test to qualify for being diagnosed with dementia? And what is this? Is it actually a proper diagnostic tool? Do you want any more questions or do you want to answer a couple of those?
So Greg, you're asking me if I understand, like, what is this thing called the SAGE? Because it's a little bit different. Okay. So the mini mental state exam, otherwise known as the full state, okay, which is it's been around. It is a 30 question thing, the first 10 of which have to do with time orientation, place orientation. Then it asks you to remember three words to check on your recall. Okay, and then it asks you what were the three words in a few minutes after I distract you. It asks you to do serial sevens, which is I have you have 100, take away seven, 5 times. Or I have you spell the word world backwards. And then I say this, no ifs, ands, or buts, and then have you repeat that, and then have draw two intersecting pentagons. And then I have you do things like take this piece of paper, fold it, and have put it on the floor, a three-step instruction. And then I have you write a sentence. It can say anything as long as it's a sentence. So sometimes people of faith will write Jesus wept, period. It's like it counts. Or you can write a really elaborate sentence, but can you write a sentence? Then there's also then what were the three words I gave you at the beginning? Okay, so that's sort of the thing. And we, for the longest time, used this as the gold standard. Well, it turns out, number one, people learn this test. Even with dementia, when you give me a test like that, my brain goes, wow, it's really important. I'm not good at taking tests, or maybe I am. And it also is very good, it turns out, not at noticing your first signs of dementia, but at noticing whether or not you socioeconomically were raised in a very rich area, an enriched area, or a very deprived area, and how far you went in school. It'll let us know those kind of things. Was that what we were screening for, though?
No, I think we missed the bullseye on that one. Now, I know that there was one where they were asking people about time, you know, to draw the hands of a clock and the numbers clock and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not going to work fairly soon because all the young people now have digital watches and digital phones.
Yeah, so unfortunately, analog clocks are no longer going to be such a common thing, and the idea of clockwise, counterclockwise, and point hands on the clock. So that one's going to go the way of things because that's not one. So we really want to have something that lets us know whether people can put things in quadrants and whether or not they have a full visual perceptual ability. So one thing that some people are using to replace that is called trail making. And so that you have numbers and letters, it's sequential, spread all over the thing was in circles. And then you're supposed to take your pen and go 1A, 2B, 3C. So you keep flipping categories and you try to do it within a time span. So it allows us to look at your visual regard and your ability to do this complicated task. So it's at least it approximates and allows us to look at some of that ability.
So does that sort of confirm that I may have dementia, or is that used to chart how far along the journey I may be with dementia? What does it prove?
Okay, so what it shows me is I want to see you drive if you have a lot of difficulty in this, because divided attention, I want to see you pay bills. I want to see you cook a meal, because what happens is you've got to keep track of multiple things to complete those tasks. And so what it allows me as a clinician to do is go, huh, that's a screen. It's called a screen because people who go through the screen, I'm less concerned about. I mean, if you can do that task, then I may still want to look at some other stuff. But if you're able to do that trail making task in under 2 minutes, Okay, I'm a little less worried about you driving. If, however, or just cooking or paying bills, but I still could look at some other stuff. It just says, big probability, nothing going on. High probability, something going on. Now, there are other indicators, though, because that's just one little piece. So the other ones that have come up as possibilities is I use animal fluency a lot, because the evidence is when you ask people to name animals, their brain lights up and it uses a lot of the different brain areas. And if I'm really skillful about my knowledge about function, I can really gather, number one, a baseline and then measure you off your baseline. So it takes about a minute. So it's one of my favorites to start with as a screen. But there are a couple other out there. There's the SAGE. There's the MoCA, which is the Canadian version of something. It's a little bit different. And then we've got the SLUMS, the St. Louis University Mental Screen. So all of them are, how should I say this, paper pencil. They're all paper pencil. So they're all testing sort of your performance level. And there's sort of ballparks. And the plus of the SAGE and the some of the others is that there are different forms of it. So when you take it a second time, they vary some things so that you don't learn the test with the same exact answers as the other one. There's less emphasis on orientation, which tends to be a less of a helpful thing for many people as we get older. The tricky part, however, is that unless I have a baseline on these, I'm not going to know a whole lot of whether you've changed, which is really the indication that you might be having a cognitive change. And it would tell me whether it's a fast change or a slow change or a maybe a mood thing. Because if you say, I can't do this. This is hard. I can't. You don't understand. I'm not right now. I know I should, but I can't. That's more indicative of depression, actually, that response than dementia. So, you know, for those of us who are knowledgeable, it can be really helpful. For people who are maybe not so knowledgeable, it's a tool that you have to use carefully because it should be a screening tool, not an evaluation of your brain changes that would allow me to know for sure what exactly is working and what's not.
People like myself, you hear the word test, instantly I'm off the charts.
Yeah.
Never a fan of tests, except for my driving test and my power saw test and a few things that I was actually interested in.
And so what tends to happen is people either perform exceptionally well, and yet in their real life, people around them are going, but you don't understand. There's no way. Are you telling me she only has mild cognitive impairment? I mean, we can't. Because my life experience and paper pencil experience are different things. And sometimes your brain pulls it all together because it says, you know what, if you fail this test, people are going to know things and think things. And so your brain protects you and says, I'll give you everything I've got. To the extent that I finish the test, which shows I was fine, and I drive the wrong way on the interstate home and get stopped by the cops because my brain gave me everything it had for the test. But we forgot the job of getting home also has to be done by the brain. And so, wow, what just happened?
So I'm suspecting that it's probably not a good idea to say to somebody, Dad, we're taking you to the doctor. We're going to do this test for dementia. Probably not the best way to approach it. If I want to talk to somebody and get some ideas on how to approach this tactfully or sensitively, how can I do that? Can I talk to Tipa? Can I talk to somebody else there? How do I reach out?
We do have some videos and we do have some webinars on this topic, you know, because the topic is, you know, how do you help somebody who doesn't want to go to the doctor go? Or what do you do when you suspect something is going on? And the answer is not, Mom, I think you got dementia. So we have some like resources, but we also have people that you could talk to and talk through and sort of raise what your concern is to make sure that what you're looking at is what you think you're looking at and who you're thinking of talking to makes the most sense, or that the whole puzzle might come together versus fall apart. So,
Tipa, thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg.
This edition of Dementia Care Partners is brought to you by joinimp.com, the smart call blocker for landlines. For more information on dementia care, visit tipasnow.com. If you're signed into your Spotify account, we'd love to get your feedback. How? Click into the episode details and look over the episode question and poll. Send us your comments and vote so we can answer your questions and better tailor this content to your needs. We look forward to hearing from you.